Mr. Timothy N. Dean, a doctoral candidate at St. Louis University, who is currently finishing his dissertation on the doctrine of creation as a unifying theme in the theology of Irenaeus. He has his bachelor's degree from Wheaton College in Illinois and his M.A.R. from Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. His talk this afternoon is entitled Reading Between the Lines, Meaning and the Gnostic Myth.
On a first reading, the Gnostic myths strike the modern reader as comprehensible, even ludicrous. Yet it is clear from the accounts of Irenaeus, Clement of Alexandria, and other early Christian fathers that Gnosticism was an attractive system of belief in the first 3 centuries of the Common Era. These same patristic reports testify that this eclectic teaching was dangerous to orthodoxy, at least Orthodox Christianity, since it not only attracted potential converts, but often claimed to be the authentic heir of the apostolic tradition. The meaning that this Gnostic myth held for the Gnostic adherent is important, not only because a sizable community found religious expression in it, but also because it forms part of the religious world of the early fathers. Before looking at the Gnostic myth, then, and suggesting some aspects of its meaning, 2 comments must be made to set the discussion in perspective. First of all, it must be remembered that Gnosticism is a term ancient and modern scholars have applied to a very heterogeneous collection of religious philosophical systems. The chief characteristic uniting them is a belief that one is saved by knowledge of the supreme God, who is totally beyond and separate from the temporal order. However, the systems that communicate this belief vary widely. Some postulate 2 eternal and opposing principles. Others only begin with 1 supreme principle. Some speak of 7 heavens, others of 30 heavens, others of 365. In some, the supreme God is dyad, in others, monad. In addition, some Gnostic groups appear as schools of thought, while others are institutionalized religious communities. Gnostic ethics range from strict asceticism to libertarian abandonment. Therefore, it is impossible to speak of Gnosticism as a single entity. This difficulty leads to a more basic concern, namely that in Gnosticism, however one defines the term, one is most likely dealing with a structure of belief quite different from that of patristic or contemporary Christianity. One cannot assume that the Gnostic myth is to be equated with Gnostic dogma in the same manner that early Christianity canonized the gospel narratives. Several details suggest this. First of all, Gnosticism is incredibly eclectic. Indeed, its mythic cast encouraged eclecticism and continuous expansion and elaboration. In contrast to early Christianity, the tradition of Gnostic teachers wish to preserve and hand down does not appear to be the myth in and of itself. Perhaps it is the meaning that is to be preserved and handed down, the myth being only a form to be used and freely adapted to better communicate this meaning. Ptolemy clearly indicates in his letter to Flora that the Gnostic initiate is to grow in understanding of the mysteries as he or she is accounted worthy of them. In addition, a comparison of the material in the patristic heresiologists to that found in the Nag Hammadi Library reveals very few direct parallels. Mythic fragments and figures are found in the Nag Hammadi material, but not the systematic form found in the heresiologists. The myth may have only been the means of introducing the initiate to Gnostic mysteries. This suggests that for the Gnostics, it was not the myth, but the meaning that held pivotal importance. Now, with these concerns in mind, we can analyze or describe and analyze the Gnostic myth. for this paper, I am following one patristic heresiologist, Irenaeus, in presenting the myth as he presents it. For the purpose of this paper, the Gnostic myth will be described in its primitive form, that of Simon and Helena. Then it will be expanded upon by looking at the myth in its Valentinian development, passing over Menander and Hippocrates, Basilides, and others. The patristic fathers regarded Simon Magus of Acts chapter 8, 1 through 11 as the originator of the Gnostic heresy. Simon himself claimed to be the supreme father and his consort Helena, his first thought, or Ennoia. Ennoia, knowing the will of the father, descended to the lower regions and gave birth to the angels. These angels then created the visible earth and mankind. However, the angels were envious of Ennoia because she alone knew the Father. They did not wish to be considered the progeny of another, but wanted to be directly from the Father. Therefore, they detained Ennoia within the creation by shutting her up inside a human body. Ennoia was condemned to transmigrate from one female body to another throughout the centuries. She was, for example, the Helen over whom the Trojan War was fought. In the first century, her ignominious wanderings had led her to prostitute herself in Tyre. The father, however, descended in the form of a man, namely Simon, to search for his lost thought or Ennoia, and to free her from her bonds. Finding Helena in a Tyrrhenian brothel, the father is at last reunited with his thought. Thus, he is able to grant redemption to mankind by imparting knowledge of himself. Therefore, the ones who know Simon know the Supreme Father. They know the higher realities that lie beyond temporal existence. They also know that the angels of this world are not the highest realities, and the laws that they require of mankind are of no importance. Notice, then, a few important features of the myth. First of all, the supreme God and lower realities are separated. The original trouble comes from this separation. The created powers, who are in turn responsible for the material world, are agnostic of the Father. Therein lies the difficulty. The Gnostic explanation for why everything has literally gone amok revolves around the essential nature of the supreme God. Irenaeus recognized this fundamental Gnostic teaching when he wrote, quote, "But if ignorance is an evil and you declare all evils to have derived their strength from it, while you maintain that the greatness and power of the Father is cause of this ignorance, you do thus set him forth as the author of all evils. For you state as the cause of evil this fact, that no one could contemplate his greatness. God is," end of quote. "God is unknowable, and the inordinate quest to know God separates the seeker from knowledge of God. The angelic fall is the search for God apart from his Ennoia, or his thought." This then introduces a second feature of the myth. God and his first thought, or Ennoia, became separated. That is, the supreme God and the only being who knows the supreme God are separated. God is unknowable because he has been separated from his thought. The material creation is a manifestation of this separation, and the means by which God continues to be agnostic. The myth, then, is a description of how God became unknowable and regained his thought for knowledge. This has relevance to humanity because God must be reunited with his knowledge for mankind to know God, and so be redeemed from earthly life. Fortunately, the unknown father has found his thought, so can be known. The same ideas are found in Valentinianism, though at a much higher level of sophistication. Most notably in Valentinianism, one sees a conscious attempt towards Christianization of the mythic structure. This includes use of Logos, Christ, and Jesus Redeemer figures, as well as other Christian concepts such as Ecclesia or Cross. More importantly, the Valentinian myth reflects a tripartite concept of reality. between the categories of heavenly, that which is connected to the Supreme Father, and earthly, connected to the created order, is the psychic order, to which is relegated conventional or orthodox Christianity and Christians. Valentinian Gnosticism makes allowances for ordinary Christianity, but to those who are capable, to the Gnostic, it offers something much beyond. Briefly, the Valentinian myth is as follows. The Supreme God emanates from himself his fullness, or pleroma, consisting of 30 aeons, or spiritual beings. The first aeon is nous, or mind, who is the only aeon who knows the Father. The lowest aeon, Sophia, is overtaken by a desire to know the Father in himself, apart from nous. Notice then that the Helen of the Sophia myth is enlarged upon here, and that agnosticism of the Father and the frustration resulting from it resides fully within the pleroma. Sophia is healed from this lascivious desire by a timely word from nous. Her passion is stripped from her and cast outside the pleroma. This passion is hypostasized and named Agamemnon. The pattern repeats itself, this time in the realm outside the pleroma. Agamemnon is overtaken by a great passion to know her origins. She is healed of this by a spiritual being, namely Christ, who descends from the pleroma. Her passions are stripped from her, hypostasized, and becomes a demiurge, or the creator. This duplication of the fall account is the manner by which Valentinian Gnosticism achieves its tripartite structure to accommodate Christianity. The chief characteristic of the demiurge is that he is ignorant of everything above him. Agnostic of the Supreme Father and even of Agamemnon, who brought him forth, he declares himself to be the Supreme God and creates the material world. He also creates humanity. But unknown to him, Agamemnon deposits the spiritual seed within mankind. Therefore, the human being is a compound per being, composed of a spiritual seed imprisoned in a material body. In this present world, the Gnostic learns of his heavenly nature. He learns that his true self is gold hidden in mud. He learns that despite temporal appearances, he is really eternal and divine. The vicissitudes of human existence no longer claim his attention. He is only concerned with realities that transcend earthly existence, because only they are real. The basic structure of Valentinianism, apart from his mythic narrative, is very similar to the teachings of Simon. The unknown God is known only to, and therefore only through, his thought or mind. For spiritual beings lasciviously search for God by attempting to know God absolutely, apart from his mind or thought. The result is the fall, which is the imprisonment of spiritual beings within the material order. Gnosis, or knowledge of God, is salvation, because it reveals to the initiate his or her spiritual origins, and not in the non-reality of the material order. These mythic lines. Gnosticism threatened Christianity because it aimed at converting the intellectual pagan. It focused on the aristocratic mentality, appealing for the very desirable select few. Certainly, it offered more than a quaint story of a transcendent, albeit absent-minded God whose difficulties resulted in the material creation. Gnosticism is, first of all, an extremely attractive theosophy. It clearly describes how the vicissitudes of material existence originated. Evil is the result of an unfortunate division in the divine being. God became divided from his knowledge. The passions that resulted from this catastrophe in the divine being formed the material world. This is an attractive theory because it truly answers the question, whence evil? Why existential difficulties? Gnosticism provides a more intellectually satisfying answer than does Orthodox Christianity. In the latter, no matter how one dresses it up with divine grace and love, one cannot escape that evil comes from God and yet it's man's fault. In Gnosticism, this paradoxical and contradictory approach is resolved in an unequivocal statement that evil is not a human problem, but a divine problem. The origin of evil is rooted in the very nature of God. His transcendence, his unknowableness, causes the lascivious passions that result in the material world. It is out of this view of reality that the fundamental meaning of the Gnostic myth emerges. Gnosticism is not simply the description of how everything went amok. It is the assurance that one's true essence is divine gold buried in material mud. Gnosticism is dualistic, a dualism that opposes the spiritual and the material. The Gnostic myth reveals to the Gnostic initiate that despite his existential perceptions, his real self is spiritual, not material. Gnosticism is a theology of self-discovery. The gnosis that an initiate receives is the knowledge that he or she is divine. A Gnostic life, then, is a dream. It is full of illusions and neurotic terrors. When one lives with a distorted view of reality, life is a nightmare. It is living by the belief that one is a separate self, unrelated to the divine. Therefore, knowledge is not primary. The knowledge or gnosis of Gnosticism is not primarily cognitive or analytical. It is an awakening. This is from the Gospel of Truth. The knowledge of the Father they value as the dawn. This is the way each one has acted, as though asleep at the time when he was ignorant. And this is the way he has come to knowledge, as if he had awakened. Gnosis is a sudden and transforming realization. The Gnostic myth is a poetic expression of human experience and desire projected into a pleromic scale. It represents the inner longing of the human self to transcend finiteness and know ultimate realities. Its appeal was so attractive because it gave meaning to meaningless existence. Existential difficulties are not the vicissitudes of human existence, they are manifestations of divine trauma. The Gnostic initiate discovered that his personal quest for self-discovery really was a movement in the divine being. His personal integration is divine integration. Gnosticism was attractive precisely where it was most antithetical to the Christian message. Christianity taught a human fall and a divine solution. Gnosticism taught a divine fall. Because the essence of the human person was divine, human salvation is salvation of the divine. The divine search for the lost anoia is the human search for the transcendental self. Restoration of unity within oneself, that is the realization of one's transcendental self, is the restoration of divine unity. The Gnostic myth is as much about the human psyche as it is about the divine. In Gnosticism, they are one.